This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up after these messages, next it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fagering. And at 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. At 11, on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with Aissa Papaitia Bukak, and I apologize for my pronunciation of that, author of the Trojan War Museum and other stories. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk, Multnomah County Library staffers LaFoster Williams and Milo Reed will share their favorite reads. Don't forget that you can hear all these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Project Northwest on Friday, September 6th at 10 p.m. at the Atlantis Lounge inside Mississippi Pizza in Portland. Project Northwest is a local zine that helps promote local hip-hop and R&B artists with an emphasis on showcasing artists that identify as Black and POC, LGBTQIA+, women, and artists who experience disabilities. Again, that's Project Northwest on Friday, September 6th at 10 p.m. at the Atlantis Lounge inside Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. And you're going to like this show. I'm going to have a live interview with District 42 primary candidate Paige Kreisman, and that'll be coming right up. First, headlines. There is a NRC event report relating to Oregon and near Portland. They write, summary of information received from State of Oregon. On August 28th, the Oregon Department of Health and Radiation Protection received a report from the R.S. Davis Scrapyard at 10105 Southeast Mather Road in Clackamas that a moisture density gauge was found in a 55-gallon drum that was crimped at the top so the gauge would not fall out. The gauge is a CPN MC3 Porta probe with a cesium source and an americium source. It has a 10 MCI cesium source and a 50 MCI cesium americium source. So to give you an idea, a typical household smoke detector contains 0.9 microcuries or 33,000 becquerels of 241 americium, and 1 gram of americium dioxide is sufficient to make 5,000 smoke detectors. So this is really a hell of a lot of americium. It's an alpha detector, and the cesium is putting out hard beta, really hard beta, screw you up beta. The scrapyard employed a contractor to take radiation readings, they write, and perform a swipe test of the gauge. The gauge housing appears to be damaged, but the source housing, it seems, intact. The contractor was unable to inspect the bottom of the gauge inside the drum. The following was measured: a reading of 13 millirems per hour on contact at the side, a reading of 200 millirems per hour on contact at the bottom, a reading of 3 millirems per hour 1 foot from the side, and swipe tests were less than background. And it reads, the State of Oregon radiation inspector believes the gauge is damaged because normal radiation readings for a similar gauge at 1 meter would be 0.4 millirems per hour. And as I said, it was 3. So the State of Oregon will be conducting an investigation. The gauge is currently under the control of the scrap yard. The danger here is not the direct radiation, which is less than a Category 3 incident under the NRC, but the exposure of the material to the environment and the implications of finding a radioactive source sealed in a drum sent to a metals recycling shop. This happened in Brazil some years ago and sickened dozens of people. So good on R.S. Davis for keeping their monitors on. Now turning to international news, Russia's foreign minister spokeswoman Maria Zakharova announced on Wednesday that her country repudiates the Venezuelan opposition's attempt to form a parallel government from the U.S. embassy in Colombia. Quoting Zakharova, "What is the goal of the office established by the United States? According to the U.S. State Department's statement, Washington plans to use it to legitimize contacts with the self-proclaimed President Guaido and to exert further pressure on the legitimate government in Caracas. This construct is absolutely illegitimate," end quote. These statements are in response to the announcement of the creation of a Venezuelan Affairs Office at U.S. Embassy in Bogota, which would be used by representatives of Juan Guaido. The opposition politician who declared himself interim president at the rally held in Caracas on January 23rd. The Russian diplomat said that the actions of the U.S. government, which are supposedly aimed at fostering respect for law, are not facilitating at all any feasible resolution of the political impasse in the South American country. And then turning to national news, the special election in North Carolina's 9th congressional district, according to Alternet, a do-over from the 2018 balloting that was invalidated because of the blatant attempt by the Republicans to steal it, is just days away. This traditionally Republican district is so close to turning blue that the GOP is in total panic. They write, "In its panic, it's turning this into a referendum on Donald Trump." Not only have Republicans got Trump flying in for a rally on September 9th, the day before balloting, but they've also got an ad and a robocall from Trump flooding the district. They are making this call all about him, which would make winning this district all the sweeter for the Democrats, but especially for Dan McCready, who has had the longest 2018 campaign imaginable. McCready and his opponent, Dan Bishop, famous for sponsoring North Carolina's bathroom bill barring transgender students from using the facilities of the gender they identify with, are by all polling accounts tied. And this is one that may go over to the other side. But you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I'm here with Paige Kreisman, who is a Democratic Socialist candidate, a veteran running in the primary for Oregon House Representative in District 42, which takes up, District 42? I just got that switched around. Anyway, which takes up a chunk of inner Southeast Portland, including Buckman and Ladd's Addition, and may include this radio station. Paige, thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Oregon Democratic presidential primary is in May. Is that when your race is run?
It is, May 19th.
Okay. So what inspired you to run? Was it Nosey's vote, trimming PERS? Can you explain what you would have done in the PERS vote?
Yeah, so the PERS vote really was what pushed me over the edge to run. The way that was conducted by the Democratic supermajority, I think, was reprehensible. There was an entire coalition of unions that were organized to oppose the bill, and the Democratic leadership wouldn't even meet with them, shut them out, close the door, wouldn't bring them to the table. Meanwhile, Democratic leadership and our supermajority is more than happy to meet with Nike and OBI, Oregon Business and Industries, the largest business lobbying group in the state, and meet with the Republicans, but they won't meet with the union movement and with the workers who are going to be directly impacted by these public employee pension cuts. So that already made me very upset with our Democrat supermajority that we worked so hard to elect last year. And then when I saw that Rob was going to vote against this, that left me very shocked, because Rob has been a staple of the union movement for a long time. He works for Oregon Nurses Association. So to see him turn his back on the union movement and vote to cut the pensions of his own coworkers, who he has to see every day when he goes into work, that was something that shocked me and very much disappointed me. And it was that point that myself and other community groups, we got together, and I met with people affected. I talked with teachers, and we decided that someone had a primary, Rob Nose, because we cannot let Democrats get away with voting to cut public employee pensions in 2019. We have to do better.
Let me ask you more about that, because how much of a cut was it for a teacher?
So for Tier 1 beneficiaries, it would be a 7% cut at the time of retirement, meaning 7% less in what their total retirement pension will be worth at the time of retirement for Tier 1 beneficiaries, and 12% for Tier 2 beneficiaries.
Okay. So my understanding, which may be a little clunky, of this was that it was a trade-off, that they made a deal with the Republicans who were not even showing up for quorum, that they would pass a vote for, I think it was education, if they allowed this cut to go through, this change to go through to the pensions. Now, I'm a retiree. I'm not on PERS. I'm on TriMet retirement, and I would be very upset if anyone cut my pension. My attitude towards that is it was a deal. Part of our wages were to be set aside for our pensions. I worked for decades, and now I'm getting the pension that I earned, in my view, and so they don't get to cut it. So I think I can understand the rage that people feel when those pensions are cut. But how would you have handled that sort of wheeling and dealing situation in the legislature?
I don't think we should be cutting deals or negotiating with Republicans. We have an Oregon Democratic supermajority for a reason. The people of this state elected a Democratic supermajority. We don't need to negotiate with Republicans. And even if we did need to, we still shouldn't. The Republican Party is not a party in 2019 that is morally approachable for negotiation. This is the party that brought us concentration camps, that brought us as ICE. This is not a party that we should be sitting at the table with at all. And we do not need to in Oregon. We have a Democratic supermajority. All it takes is a little bit of spine, a little bit of gumption on behalf of the Democratic leadership to not cave to these blackmailing tactics of quorum breaking and to simply play hardball with the Republicans and get their votes in line and find solutions that doesn't hurt workers, that doesn't hurt the people that elected this Democratic supermajority in the first place.
You know, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I think it brings up the larger context. Why are the Democrats so soft? And I think it must surely have to do with the context of capitalism, of where they get their money, of the revolving door situation with the legislature and all legislatures in the United States, allowing people to go into industry and become lobbyists, et cetera, after their term. And that brings up socialism. You say that you are, with the Democratic Socialists of Portland or of Oregon?
Democratic Socialists of America, Portland chapter has endorsed
okay,
me.
Got it. Okay. How does that work out? I mean, how would your attitude be different in that context, the ALEC organization, for example, bringing in pre-written bills and pressuring congressmen constantly to go with Koch brother type scams? How would you bring your democratic socialism or your socialism generally to the legislature? What would that look like?
It would look like a state representative whose only constituent is the people, not corporations that write checks, not corporations that host fundraisers, but the people that elected me, the people that knocked on doors for me, the people who phone banked for me. That's how I'm going to get elected, because I'm running a 100% people-powered campaign. I'm not accepting any corporate money. So I don't need to go and sit down at the table with corporate lobbyists, unlike every single state legislator in Salem at this point. There is none that don't take corporate money. And Oregon's campaign finance is some of the loosest laws in the country. We're one of only six states that allow unlimited corporate campaign contributions. And we have the second most expensive elections per capita behind only New Jersey in the country. We had a state house race where a Democrat raised over $1 million last cycle. $1 million in a state house race, that's absurd. You can run for U.S. Senate or governor in Wyoming or Montana or North Dakota for that much money. And we have a state house race that's spending that kind of money. It's absurd. And the result of that is a state legislature and legislators that prioritize corporate interests over the interests of the broader state. And they're very open and blatant about this. So Peter Courtney, the Senate President, and Tina Kotek, the Speaker of the House, during the Student Success Act, were very transparent, and they were negotiating with OBI, Oregon Business and Industries. And they were very transparent with what they gave them. So Oregon Business Industry sent out an email to all their members stating what they got in exchange for not challenging the Student Success Act at the ballot. And part of that was the biggest thing that I think in there was a state preemption on gross receipts tax and corporate commercial activities taxes, which would prevent local governments such as cities, counties, and districts from raising taxes with a gross receipts tax or commercial activities tax, such as the Portland Clean Energy Fund is doing. It's not retroactive, so PSEF is fine. It's not in danger. But that was a massive handout to OBI, and it was transparently done. So this is something that affects the entire legislature. It's in the culture there. It's how Oregon Democrats get elected, and that's where they get their power from, is corporate money and waiting in line and waiting for their turn to run for office or to run for higher office. And most of them run unopposed. So the only way that we're going to change that and break that up is to start electing representatives that don't take any corporate money, and then go after campaign finance reform. That's why it's one of my top priorities, to join the other 22 states in the country that prohibit corporate campaign contributions.
It seems that what you're describing is ordinary and legal business, but you're also describing corruption, basically the sidelining of public concerns for private concerns.
Right, it's very legal. It's perfectly legal, and they're proud about it.
And yet it remains pretty much invisible. People don't know the ins and outs of this. The sausage making, it's called, but sausage making can be pretty foul. Well, tell me how you would address budgeting in the legislature. What is approximately the Oregon budget? Is it in the millions or billions?
It's in the billions, many, many billions, yes.
And the income streams come largely from income tax, and you mentioned Nike. You probably recall that Nike was given a special legislative session, I believe it was by Kitzhaber, and it's been done again since. What would you have to say about that sort of special deal-making?
Well, it has to stop. I mean, we have seen just absolute total domination of the legislative process by Nike as long as I can remember here in Oregon. And the result of that is just corporate tax cuts and tax evasion by Nike and by other large corporations here in Oregon. And the only way we're going to stop that is to get in there and fight to elect representatives who don't take corporate money and won't sit at the table with Nike.
The states are involved in a race to the bottom with corporations like that. How would you address that? I mean, what's to keep Nike from running away?
Well, I mean, first of all, Nike does most of their operations outside the state anyway. They only stay here for the corporate tax cuts. So they don't produce their sneakers here in Oregon. This is just where their headquarters are. They produce their sneakers in the global South through imperialist business tactics and exploitation of labor. So if Nike moves their headquarters...
You said the I word. That's the first time.
Oh, yes. Yes,
I don't think I've heard that from candidates very much.
Yeah. Talking about imperialism as a function of capital is a whole nother subject, but maybe we can get into that. But to answer your question... if Nike does leave, then so be it. We can create more jobs because labor creates jobs, not Nike. Nike is not a job creator, but labor creates jobs. We're the ones, the workers that produce all value under capitalism. So we can continue without Nike. We can afford that. And
so there's been a bit of a change in your life for that sort of thing, because you were once on the sharp end of imperialism. Can you talk about that?
And being on the sharp end, meaning I was the sharp end, not the victim on the other side of the pointy end, but I was the sharp end in that I was an infantryman in the Army, in the U.S. Army. I was the first woman to serve as an indirect fire infantryman, a combat job previously open only to men. And I deployed to the Middle East, to Kuwait and Qatar, but specifically in Qatar is where imperialism as a function of capital was laid very clear to me. It was because I was right there at the pointy end of it. So imperialism as a function of capital is a theory that imperialism is not just dropping bombs and invading countries, but it's also the export of capital from white Western European and North American countries to the global South, because capital can flow over borders freely, whereas labor cannot. So a U.S. Factory are opening up in Southeast Asia, or a British-owned mine opening up in South America to use the local labor but export the profits back to the West. And how that played out in Qatar was they were building stadiums for the World Cup there, and all the investment was owned by, well, not all, but most of the investment capital coming into the country for that was owned by European and U.S. companies. And the labor was coming from India and Pakistan and Oman and Yemen and East Africa mostly. These were migrant workers that worked in Qatar and were essentially slave laborers, because they would have their passports revoked when they signed a contract with the company. And the company would hold on to their passports and not allow them to leave the country until their contract expired, which
could
be
an ugly and little-known scene.
Right, yeah. And then their contract would, of course, sometimes get lost, or you know, their contract would get extended without, you know, with only one party consent, because there's very loose labor laws in Qatar. And then they would be paid almost nothing and work in terrible conditions. And I interacted with this slave labor every day when I was there. I guarded a gate on Camp Azalea, which is the U.S. or one of the U.S. military bases in Qatar. And we would bus all this slave labor into the base to run the base for us, to pipe out our sewage and to clean the base. And there was slave labor that came in and cleaned my guard shack while I was there. And I wasn't there to stop these slaves from escaping. That wasn't my job. But if they wanted to fight back against their oppressors and overcome that oppression, then I would have been the violence that would have shut that down. So that exposed to me in a very raw way what imperialism is and what its effects are on the other end of that spear, on the other end of that point of imperialism, on the working people that suffer from it. So that's how I became an anti-imperialist. And when I got back from that deployment, I very much shifted my outlook on what I was doing in my life and why I was a part of this military machine that is responsible for a tremendous amount of evil worldwide.
Well, good on you for thinking your way out of that box. Do you think that you would like to take phone calls?
Sure, absolutely.
The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Now I want to bring up the transgender thing. I hope that you'll give me a pass saying this sort of thing, since I'm a clockable tranny myself and very out. Clockable, for those of you who don't know, means that you can tell I'm a tranny. Well, I can't tell that Paige is, but she's very open about it. How has this affected your run for office? What's it like for you?
It's something that we have to navigate. I'm the first trans woman to run for the state legislature in Oregon, anywhere in the state. So it's something that that voters haven't seen before and aren't used to, and it makes voters uncomfortable sometimes. But you know, that's okay. It's something that I'm happy to work through. It's something I'm happy to talk about and have conversations with, because, you know, it's not going to get better for trans people. We're not going to be able to get any representation if we don't start running for office, and we don't start getting out there and having examples that trans people can be more than, you know, sex workers, or more than, you know, pity cases of trauma stories, and more than, you know, mentally ill people that just need to be saved, because that's often the outlook that a lot of well-meaning liberals have of trans people. We can be functioning, I'm doing air quotes because that's such a problematic term, but functioning members of society.
I think I can almost hear the air quotes.
Yeah. We need more examples of trans people being able to lead ourselves and be able to represent other people in a state legislature. And we're not going to do that until we just start putting our candidates out there.
Okay, we've got Mike on the air. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Hello, Mike. You there? Good morning.
Yeah, thank you, K-Boo. Good morning, and thank you for your guest. I had a question about something you touched on before about Kitzhaber having a special backroom deals. Is that some sort of legal loophole that they're doing there? And how does that affect what is called the Monsanto deal like down in using GMO type crops in some of the counties in Oregon. Thank you.
Well, I don't know if it's much of a loophole, because if it is a loophole, it's you know, massive and glaring. I think it's just generally accepted as it's perfectly legal, and I think it's just generally accepted as part of business in Oregon, how you just pay to play. And it's been generally accepted by politicians and by business groups and lobbyists that this is how the state's going to function, that if you pay money into campaigns and you make contributions, then you get a seat at the table. And that's just the culture and how it works. As for GMOs being used on crops in Oregon, I think it absolutely plays an effect, because just like every other corporation that has a stake in Oregon, companies that have a stake in GMO use and chemicals in Oregon are also giving money, and they're giving money to state legislators, and they're giving money to governors and future potential governors, like attorney generals and secretaries of state, who often are the pipeline into the governorship. So not to hit on the same points over and over again, but this isn't going to stop until we stop it, until the voters stop it, until the people say that we're not going to elect you if you keep taking this money.
Okay, well, we may have time for another call. The number called 503-231-8187, but since we were running a little low on time, I am with Paige Kreisman, Democratic Socialist candidate, a veteran running in primary for Oregon House Representatives in District 42. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. And so the topics that stacked up in the queue that we didn't have time to get to are the Green New Deal, campaign finance reform, union support, and housing. You get to pick.
I think I want to talk about the Green New Deal then.
Okay, all right.
No other issue matters if we don't have a planet to live on.
That kind of makes sense.
So I'm calling for an Oregon Green New Deal, and this is something that my platform is very much bringing to the forefront of Oregon politics, but I can't claim credit for it. This is something that the Oregon Just Transition Alliance has been working on for a long time, and the Oregon Just Transition Alliance is a coalition of climate activist groups and frontline community advocacy groups that have been calling for an Oregon Green New Deal as opposed to the cap and trade solution that was put forward by the corporate Democrats just this last session.
Talk about cap and trade for a moment. What's your objection?
My objection to cap and trade is that it's a market-based plan that makes it more expensive to pollute instead of making it illegal to pollute, as I would prefer. It's also something that creates sacrifice zones that is going to hurt frontline communities. It's something that has been proven in California to only marginally affect or not affect at all emissions. And also it's covered in handouts to industry. It exempts the forestry and agriculture industry wholesale, something that is very clear in campaign finance reports why that's in there.
What's your take on Sanders' Green New Deal? Have you read the
I have, document? Yeah. It's my favorite proposal out of all the national proposals so far. I think it's the most comprehensive. It has a just transition in there for workers that are impacted by industry shifts. So one of the big reasons that there was a lot of opposition to cap and trade was because supposedly it would affect jobs and it would affect workers, but there was nothing in there to protect those workers. Whereas in a Green New Deal, we can provide funding to ensure a salary during times of unemployment, and to provide education funding for workers that are going to lose their jobs.
Okay, I'm sorry, I have to cut you off.
Yeah, no, sorry, go for it.
We're running out of time, and Paige Kreisman, thank you so much for joining me on KBOO Press Watch. Stay tuned for Fight the Empire. You've been listening to 90.7 FM on the transmitter and KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Festival of Nations on Saturday, September 7th, 11 a.m. at the Extended Home LLC building in Portland. The Festival of Nations celebrates and embraces the diversity of the Division Midway District of Portland. There will be cultural foods, vendors, activities, community services, and more. Again, that's the Festival of Nations on Saturday, September 7th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Extended Home LLC Building, 14410 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found on the KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, next, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fagering. And at 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. At 11, on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with Aisha Papacha Butok, author of the Trojan War Museum and other stories. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Multnomah County Library staffers LaFoster Williams and Milo Reed will share their favorite reads. Don't forget that you can hear all these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. If you want a third way to listen to all your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fagering. This time we're going to talk about World War II and Russia. Last Sunday was the 80th anniversary of the German invasion of Poland. And to a lot of people, they saw this as the start of World War II. But it really wasn't. The real World War II really began much sooner than that. You could say that it was a continuation of World War I, which in itself was a result of the European nations dividing.